Welcome to The Stack. This week, we have a busy show ahead. We speak with the author of a book featuring the best bookstores around the world. It's a treat. Plus, we speak with author Patrick McGuinness on his latest book, and we pay a visit to Canada to discover two new independent magazines. Stay tuned for this week's edition of The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, we have Patrick McGuinness, the founder of the expression FOMO, fear of missing out, and you will not want to miss out on the two Canadian titles we will also be featuring later in the show as well. But first, it's time to talk about bookstores. For me, that's one of the things I've been missing the most during lockdown. Marianne Julia Strauss is the author of Do You Read Me?, a wonderful compilation of the best bookstores around the world. From a favorite of mine, Livraria da Vila in São Paulo, to the iconic Daikanyama Tsutaya Books in Tokyo, they are all featured in the book. I spoke to Marianne about the book and why bookstores are essential to our lives. Bookstores are something so important, and I'm sure a lot of people are in lockdown, and they're missing them so much. You're lucky you're in Berlin and the bookstores are open there, right?
Yeah, they're open. First, thanks for having me, Fernando, on your show. And one of our main pillars of our cultural life here in Berlin, I'm so happy they were allowed to be open and people keep on going there. So the shops are a little bit smaller. They had to make these spaces where you can enter. And normally it's like about 5 people may enter the bookstore, and the service is a little bit less, but still they are open.
And the very first bookstore in your book is from Berlin, which is a shop actually I've been to, Do You Read Me?, which is fantastic. They have amazing, not only books, but also magazines, right? Do you go there often?
Yeah, because it's in my neighborhood. And Omar, the owner, he's a really cool guy. He picks this, the magazines, with such an artistic view, and his partner Jessica is a full blood bookseller. So they make a very good team. And their choice of magazines is really amazing.
Before this book, did you work in the publishing industry? Tell us a bit more, how did you reach there writing a book about the love for bookstores?
So I think I have always had a love for bookstores. So I'm a travel journalist. And I do this since 10 years now, professionally. And I wrote for several magazines, but mostly for motorcycle magazines, for spirit and bar magazines. And I always traveled around the world. And the first thing I always do when I come into a new town, I go to a bookstore. And I love the indie bookstores because they're so special. They're these cool little universes. There's this bookseller who picks his favorite books or the books he thinks make a great choice, and sometimes they're quirky, sometimes they're magic, and yeah, I always go there. And so last year I thought, why won't I make a book out of this idea? And so I went to my favorite publisher, which is Gestalten, and offered them the idea, and they said, hey, yes, great idea.
And to be honest, it's a perfect read for times like this, you know, where
absolutely,
you know, we're hearing so many difficult stories in the news all the time, and honestly I think bookstores is like almost like a safe space where people can,
yeah,
can be transported somewhere else, you know, don't you agree?
In my foreword, when I may citate myself, I wrote that bookstores are a little bit like galaxies. So if you consider every book as little world where you can dive in the thoughts of an author, in the heart, in the fantasies of somebody else, then, and even in time, then like a shelf in a bookstore is a whole galaxy. And then the bookseller is like the guardian of this galaxy. And he or she can create whatever he or she wants out of this. So, and this is what I love about bookstores. So you enter a different world. Time seems to slow down when you go into a bookstore. And I love the smell of the paper. So everybody knows this feeling. You open a new book and you just want to put your nose inside and feel the story inside there with every sense.
what I like about the book, I mean, of course, there's not only the conventional bookstores, but you choose some very specific ones. For example, the one in London, which I never been, I have to say, but I will after you recommend it, which is Treadwell's, which is, again, it's quite a magical one, right? Tell us a bit more. You like that one, right?
Yeah, I like that one especially. It's a bookstore where they sell only magic books and accessoires about magic. And it's one of these niche bookstores, special bookstores, which concentrate on one topic. So I think it's one of the most known magic bookstores in the world, that people, when they want to have a magic book, they just go to Treadwell's and they find it or they get it. And Christina, who is the owner, is a total specialist in magic. So she was like working normally before, and then she just opened this bookstore about magic books out of her passion. And they do like readings, they do shaman workshops, they do spell evenings. This too is a whole world.
Oh, I must
have to see. It's really incredible.
I must go and visit. Another thing that I love about the book, how international it is. It's definitely not just Europe. You have one bookstore from my hometown, São Paulo, Livraria da Vila. You have Strand Bookstore in New York, Casa Bosques in Mexico City. I love how international it is. So have you visited most of those bookstores or at least a few of them?
Perhaps 50%.
That's a good number.
Yeah. And the rest of them are totally on my to-visit list. They're totally in my bucket list that I want to see them all. And what I wanted to do is making a book where you can travel the world in bookstores. So I want to have at least one on every continent. And yeah.
No, and now it's the time as well to support your local bookstore as well. But I mean, I don't know, we have international listeners. Every country has different laws at the moment. Like, as you say, in Berlin, the bookstores are open. But I'm sure some of them are offering services online, delivery. I think it's the time, right, to support those places so they have enough money, you know, to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that there's this big online chain that most people buy things from, and I think that sure, algorithms are fun, but the difference to a indie bookstore is that an algorithm will not look into your eye and say, so hey, I have the feeling this book could be the next big step in your reading life. You can't have a chat with a website. So this is what indie bookstores provide that these big online chains just don't do. And I think it's important to keep this cultural cathedral alive, to just call your local bookstore and say, hey, I want to have a recommendation. Can you tell me about some new books? I would like to buy some in your place.
I just would like to ask you a hard question. I mean, if you could pick, I'm not saying your favorite because I'm sure this changes daily, but pick perhaps two bookstores in the book that you would like to mention that maybe our listeners should know and they might be inspired to go and buy the book.
Oh, it's so hard. It's so hard. So one of my favorites is definitely Harper's Books in Tel Aviv. It's sort of a street bookshop. And Joseph Harper, he's a great person and great personality. He's a father, he's a bookseller with all his heart. So he came from the United States back to Israel with some boxes of books in his luggage and just decided to open a bookstore and to just live a new life. And there was still war in Israel when he opened this shop. So he was really under pressure from all sides. So he had his kids, he had his wife. And now he's having this super sweet street bookshop where people meet and the whole street knows him. And people just come around to have a coffee with him and to browse in the books. So he specialized in history books mostly. And he knows everything about it. So he has like a library in his head, in his own head. Yeah, this is one of my favorite ones. And then which I like too is in Detroit, there's John King Books. So John King is, I don't know how old he is, perhaps 70 or 80 years old. He started in the 50s or 60s with selling books out of his car because he was so passionate about books. And now he owns this huge former glove factory that is full of books, like over 1 million books.
Wow.
Inside, and he has this whole team of amazing booksellers. They go around with walkie-talkies and lead you through the through these big halls full of shelves. And if you're really sweet to him, if you really are friendly with him, then perhaps he will show you the page of the Gutenberg Bible that he has in his own table where he works.
That was Marianne Julia Strauss. Do You Read Me is out now, published by Gestalten. And continue the show today. Our next guest, I'm sure you'll find his books in some of the bookstores we've mentioned in the previous item. That's Patrick McGuinness. He coined the term FOMO, fear of missing out. His new book is called Fear of Missing Out, Practical Decision Making in a World of Overwhelming Choice. He's also the host of hit podcast FOMO Sapiens. I spoke to Patrick about releasing a book during a pandemic.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. Basically, what happened was I was living in New York in 2001. I witnessed the attacks on New York with my own eyes. And I also, at that time, was working in venture capital and lived through the venture capital implosion of the early 2000s. And then I fled New York, basically. I just wanted to move somewhere new. And I got into business school at Harvard. And so I moved up to Boston. And having seen the world change so quickly, I decided I wanted to live for the moment at all times and do everything. And so when I got to business school, I did everything. I went on every trip. I went to every lecture, took every class, interviewed for every job. And my friends started to make fun of me, saying that I basically had this fear of missing out. So I started calling this fear of missing out. I shortened it to FOMO and wrote an article in our school newspaper called Social Theory at HBS, all about FOMO and its impact on our lives in the school.
Because, you know, it's something that everybody has, especially now with, you know, in the last decade or so, that we have more ways of communicating to each other. There's more things going on, basically. And it's interesting, Patrick, that we're living through an outbreak now. But I kind of have a feeling that, you know, cool, we're bored at our houses, but we still have this fear of missing out. I mean, okay, so we need to read this book. We need to do this. We need to go to the Zoom meeting. So I think we can also apply during what we're living now in a way, right?
Yeah, for the first week or two, I didn't have any FOMO. I was too busy doing all of the things I'd meant to do for the last 5 years. But then after that, I saw a shift and an evolution of my own FOMO and that of my friends and family, which is we can't see each other. We can't hug each other. We basically, not only do we miss out on all of the people and things that we love to do, but we're missing out on that other life that we could have been leading at this time, that sliding doors moment where you're thinking to yourself, I could have been doing a million different things and I don't know when I'm going to be able to do those again. And so that is a profound, deep FOMO that a lot of us are feeling.
It is very much a deep FOMO. I mean, I generally have a deep FOMO just to go to a restaurant, very simple things, to go to the cinema, you know, it's incredible. What are you having FOMO at the moment?
Well, like many listeners to the show, I'm an avid traveler. So I hit my 103rd country last year and I've just been thinking to myself, when will I get on a plane again? When will I be able to go to new places and or even visit the old ones that I love so much? And so that feeling of, I think it's almost like I think a lot about a FOGO or fear of going out. Just being able to get on a plane again is something that I feel a lot of FOMO around.
And Patrick, you have a new book out on the 5th of May. Well, Fear of Missing Out. That's the name of the book. Practical Decision Making in a World of Overwhelming Choice. Tell us a bit more about the book. Is this kind of the guide for that word that you invented many years ago?
So it's a guide to identifying FOMO, overcoming FOMO, because there are real and true mental health effects, financial effects, productivity effects to having FOMO. But the other word that I invented back at HBS that I wrote about in the same article that never got famous is FOBO, or fear of a better option. And that's the idea that we wait for something better to come along before we decide. So that friend who will never commit to any plans, that colleague who will never make the tough decision. It's a business affliction. It also just infects our lives. Like, what are we going to watch on Netflix when we have 7,000 options? And so the book is about how we can be decisive in a world of overwhelming choice, whether that is the little things in our lives or the big things in our lives. And it really is a guide to living decisively.
Well, and I think that's a very practical guide today, because you're right, especially now that everything's changing, it is affecting so many industries, you do need to be decisive. I think it's not the time to just wait perhaps too much. I mean, as you say, you know, you're waiting for a better opinion, which might not come, right?
Yeah, and let's think about how this plays out in world affairs. So it's not just about, there's a great story in the book about how Audi took 10 years to put out an electric vehicle, while Tesla came out with one in a couple of years. It's a startup. Startups eat large companies all the time because they are decisive. But in the realm of global affairs, Brexit, the fact you had to have two prime ministers, five elections, because people were waiting for a better option to come along before just choosing something, the parliamentarians, that's a great example of how FOBO plays out in the public sector or the responses to COVID. It may be comfortable and attractive to hope that the data comes along that says that you can do something that's less invasive. But waiting actually, not only does it end up extracting a greater toll, but a lot of the options you thought you have are no longer on the table if you wait too long.
And that's perhaps, you know, when we talk about FOMO and FOBO, FOMO actually can be positive at times, right? While FOBO, not really. FOBO should be avoided all times, right?
Absolutely. And FOMO can be actually, in taking a small dose, I like to think of FOMO like drinking wine. A little wine may loosen you up to try something new. FOBO is like smoking, secondhand effects on other people, nothing good for you. But if you listen to your FOMO, you might try that entrepreneurial project you've always dreamed of doing. And in fact, my first book was called The 10% Entrepreneur, and it was about the investment banker who starts the shirt company or the person who's a consultant who starts the candle company on the side and maybe goes full time. So if you listen to FOMO and you sort of take it in moderation, you may uncover passions, interests, or things you want to do that you hadn't sort of thought of before.
I wonder, Patrick, if you have, you know, for our listeners who are working from home, I wonder if you have any tips when it comes to be decisive during this period. I mean, do you think people, is it the time, for example, just to relax and say, you know what, let's slow down? Or is it the time to be very proactive and keep thinking, you know, about new projects? What's your approach during this period?
I think it's good to be kind to yourself and to give yourself a little space to relax. And for example, I one of the ways that I miss out on things is I meditate every day. And I've been doing that now, and I found it very helpful to sort of staying calm. So that's you need to have that as a base order sort of priority. But beyond that, the world is changing so quickly. And as much as we are seeing an economic downturn and it's going to be really pernicious, there is also opportunity. And so this is a chance to reevaluate everything in your life in a calm way, because you have plenty of time to do so. And then think about, what is the thing that you wished you had done over the last 5 years? Was it going on a trip? Was it starting a business? Was it, you know, asking that person out, and then making a plan to decisively go after those things that you wish you had done? Because reading the book you wanted to read the last 5 years is a great way to start your quarantine. But doing that one thing that has been in the back of your mind and actually finding a plan to go and execute upon that, that's a great way to make this time valuable.
That was Patrick McGuinness there. His book, Fear of Missing Out, Practical Decision Making in a World of Overwhelming Choice, is out now. And now we head to Canada, where I had the pleasure to speak to editors of two new independent titles. While they are very different in terms of content, it makes me incredibly happy to see new titles being launched in this difficult period for the publishing industry. Without further ado, we head to Vancouver first, where I spoke with Colton Proctor from Found You magazine.
I launched Found You this spring as a quarterly publication that explores contemporary issues of life in the Vancouver area, with a focus on sharing vulnerable stories from my local community. And I have designed it to have an emphasis on a queer perspective as well.
Very much so. And tell us about, I love Rhyme. She's on the cover. She's such a... I mean, I didn't know much about her, and she's a great cover girl, I must add. She's doing a very cheeky face on the cover.
I thought she would be a great choice to have on our first cover because she sort of exemplifies the local community of Vancouver in all the best ways. She, if you meet her in person, she's an absolutely positive, friendly, magnetizing personality. And her work is really special and also not rooted in any sort of capital gain. It's about building community and like strengthening our local community. And that's why I thought it would be a great cover.
Well, but we have people like you, so that's a great thing. So, I mean, issue one is out now and available, but I know times are crazy in the world. And I'm so glad that you already have plans, you know, for issue two. And I believe you have a Kickstarter page already. So tell us, our listener, if they're more interested, you know, to find out more about Found You.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they can check out foundyou.ca if they're interested in learning more. The crowdfunding campaign will be live for a month. And I thought it would be important to push through with the second issue because I don't want the virus to affect my personal goals and my goals for my publishing schedule for Found You. So.
Your original plan is to send about 4 issues a year, right?
Yeah, I've committed to creating 4 issues for the year, and then we'll see how we feel after that, if we want to sort of revamp it and, you know, raise the bar on it for another year. We'll see what happens.
That was Colton Proctor from Found You. Their isolation issue will be published soon. You can support the publishing of that issue on their Kickstarter page. Still in Canada, we head to nature now. Folk Life is a beautiful new title published by Elina Seminara. The title focuses on the west coast of Canada, on Coast Salish territory. I spoke about the title with Elina.
The idea for Folk Life came because everybody on kind of the islands on the west coast of Canada live in such an amazing, beautifully inspiring way. It's very close to the earth. It's very intentional, like everything you do. If you want to heat your house, you have to go chop the wood and that kind of thing. And it's very creative. There's so many artists here and so many ways that we surround ourselves with art, not just art on your wall, but functional ways of operating in the world that are very creative and artsy. So I'm actually a city girl, not from here, from Calgary, but I moved here when I was 18 and I just couldn't believe that there was nothing that celebrated the way that we all live here. Like we have our newspapers, we have our What's Going On magazines kind of thing, but there's nothing else and no place for us to come together. So I did a master's in publishing about 7 years ago and my goal was, I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to start a magazine. Even though everyone was like, print publishing is dead. Like even in my master's program, they were all like, well, we don't really know what you're doing here, but there's such potential because no one was doing it. But I got misled and I started event planning arts festivals, which was amazing. But then I left and I traveled the world for a couple of years and I wanted to do something for myself. And there's just such amazing magazines out there, high quality, beautiful things you want to keep, you want to show, which we don't have over here. So I was like, okay, this is my time. I have nothing else to do. It's time to focus on Folk Life. And then about a year, maybe 8 months of solid work, here it is.
And it's fantastic because you're also talking about a region. I mean, I have to be honest, I didn't know much before, you know, reading Folk Life. So perhaps it's also an incentive for people to go and visit or even to aim to have some elements of that lifestyle.
Yeah, well, the thing is because our goal is that this kind of lifestyle will inspire people everywhere. You don't have to know about the Gulf Islands here. You don't have to ever visit. But the thing is that it will... So it might inspire people to go, but it might also inspire people to either live in a different way at home. It could even be in a city, or aspire people to just see this as kind of being a dream one day. Maybe something they'll never do, but this is a different way of operating in the world, which is just beautiful. And so they can have like a window to a different way of living on their coffee table or bookshelf, which is really lovely, especially when you're in the city.
You said you were a city girl. What brought you there where you are at the moment? Do you have any family connections or it was just kind of a change of pace?
Yeah, I wish I could say that I just made the choice myself to just come here. But well, I did, but we actually had a summer house growing up here. So I'd come for a month or two every summer to this island, which we're on Gabriola Island here, but there's several Gulf Islands, which this is focused on. But when I was 18, I decided to move here from Calgary. And I've been off and on the islands for the last 12 years now, just moving around them kind of. everybody, even in Calgary, they all like my family is kind of alternative. I would be called a hippie over there. Here, I'm the opposite of a hippie. So it's like no one would ever refer to me as that. But in the city, I'm granola or whatever it is you, yeah. So the kind of go, go, go lifestyle in the city was just never working for money, doing what everybody said that you should do all of the time. And it's just so not me. However, I'm still a city girl in that I'm a workaholic and I am go, 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 but surrounded by people who aren't and who have just a very quality of living goal for themselves, which I do too. I would never do anything I didn't want to do, which is why Folk Life.
And how, for example, our listeners can find out a bit more about Folk Life or even order a copy? Because as you know, the problem also of COVID, some newsstands are closed in a few places around the world. But, you know, how, and my God, you're launching a magazine during this period. So it's also quite challenging, but we like a challenge. It's a crisis, but, you know, that's where creativity bursts as well.
Yeah. So that's been it, because when it started happening, we had just sent it to print and then things started shutting down and we were like, oh no, because as usual, I do a lot of things that people are like, oh, I think your projections are too high or that kind of thing. And so our print run was bigger than maybe a first magazine would be or lots of magazines these days. So we did decide to lower the print run for this first edition because all the shops were shut. And I was really sad about that because I really wanted to see Folk Life, much like you see other magazines featured in these specialty good shops, not just bookstores, which are amazing, or newsstands, but in these shops that feature art and work and that kind of thing. And that wasn't going to be there anymore, which was really sad. And then COVID started really happening and it was a bit of a funk for a bit trying to figure out and knowing that, oh, there's so many people taking advantage of COVID, like in certain ways, like doing online events or doing these things. And we just had no real energy behind that. But then when we started marketing Folk Life, which was really about 2 weeks into COVID, the response was amazing. It was so big. People really, especially when we launched what it looked like, I think people of course have a very visual aspect. So we realized that all of the bright sides, sure, it's not in stores, although retailers are contacting us to stock Folk Life, which is so interesting. They're all figuring out ways to sell products, to be open in various ways. So it is still getting out there, but people are going to our website, which is where we're selling Folk Life. We've got our website. We have an online store. You can email us. We've got so many ways. Buying from our website, of course, the margins are a little better too. So it keeps us more sustainable. And also it connects us with the people buying it. So every time someone purchases the first edition or the subscription, we can send a note to them just saying how thankful we are for them supporting this new endeavor. And then we connect with them on all of the platforms, on Facebook, on Instagram. And it's like really like lit a fire under us because, as you know, it's a lot of work to put together a magazine. And with no outside vocal support or enthusiasm for it, you can like burn out and then not do it. But with everybody's response, we're like, yeah, this is gonna keep on going. So it's great.
That was Alina Seminara, and the first issue of Folk Life is out now. And listeners, if you're a fan of magazines, you'll be happy to know that the Stack regular Jeremy Leslie from MacCulture, I'm sure you know him, will be hosting their first MacCulture Live online conference on Friday, the 29th of May. Make sure to check out the MacCulture webpage for more details. And well, that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hall. And if you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again at monocle.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Before we go, a little song for you. It's by Ella Fitzgerald. I could write a book. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.
If they asked me, I could write a book.